Hello and welcome to episode 455 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other M. So M, let's go around the cooler, tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. I think Joey, I'll start with you.
M, hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And I'm sorry, me? I'm Clarence Moy again.
You? Who are you?
Well, I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and you can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy, who was absent last week. I can neither confirm nor deny that Megan and I are the same person. That would actually be a very unlikely series of events for multiple reasons.
I feel like so next week I will not be here. I'm just predicting. So that's what's going to happen. We're just rotating absence.
You're just putting that out into the universe, aren't you?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Very good. So this week we are talking about a couple of things from film and a couple of things from television. Number one, we're going to talk about Civil War, the Buzzy new film from Alex Garland.
Oh, yeah.
A24's highest grossing opening weekend in their history. A polarizing film that has shockingly polarizing reactions. So we'll dive into that. And then we're going to talk about two recent television limited series, Ripley on Netflix and Mary and George on Stars. And then, of course, we'll wrap with the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. All right, Joey, are you ready?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Excellent. F yeah. All right. So Civil War, why don't you, you're the most recent person to have seen this. So why don't you start and tell us all about Civil War?
Sure. So I am in Washington, D.C. right now. The Western forces have not reached my hotel yet. But so Civil War is Alex Garland's film, latest film about, a conflict in the United States. We do not see the beginning of the conflict. We do not see the reasoning behind the conflict. We just see, I guess, the end of the conflict. And it follows a group of, journalists and war photographers as they make it from New York to Washington, D.C. They have to, like, go a roundabout way to get to Washington, D.C. because the weird way it was written in the script, the highways have been vaporized. I was like, are there aliens? Like, where are the highways? So they make it to DC, and so the cast is really mainly focuses on four people. I personally think led by Kirsten Dunst, who's this sort of Lee Miller, her name is Lee, they may even talk about it, Lee Miller pseudo figure. Wagner Moore is in it. Kaylee Spaney is this young photographer who's really working by herself, and she sort of forces her way into their car. And Stephen McKinley Henderson, in my opinion, always a very welcome, generally gentle presence and everything, popped up as sort of the, you know, esteemed colleague that everyone knows. I sort of, since I'm in DC right now until Friday, I wanted to see this in DC. I don't know why. Am I a glutton for punishment? I thought originally when the trailers dropped for this movie that I didn't think I wanted to see it because it's the trailers just stressed me out. I was like, we don't need that. I distinctly remember seeing the first trailer and being like, why did this get made? We don't need this in 2024, this ring before an election. Like, I don't need this. I thought the movie was fine, better in parts than others. Like, there are people that I remember when it dropped out of South by Southwest, there were some, you know, positive reviews that really focused on the action. And I think the action is really good. I was really into it with a lot of those sequences. But the people that were like calling it a masterpiece, I was like, all right, guys, like, all right, chill out. I think it's fine. I think some of the smaller scenes, in between some of those action pieces are, I thought they started off stronger and then it got weaker as they went along. I think mainly the, I like the relationship between Kirsten Dunst and Kaylee Spaney. But there's like a scene where I pointed this out to Clarence on my walk back when we talked about it, that it was like, Kaylee Spaney's character says after they experience something, I have never been so scared in my life, but I've never felt so alive. I think this is like actual dialogue. And I was like, all right, that's bad. That's bad dialogue. I think it's obvious that they kept stuff vague on purpose. And I don't know if we're supposed to just, just get dropped into the action. But part of me was like, I wanted to like, just like, nudge someone and be like, can you tell me anything definitive just so we're clear? And I know that's the point, and I know somebody on film Twitter would yell at me about it, about how I don't understand it, blah, 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 blah. But I thought it was fine. I think it's fine. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's horrible, but I think it's fine. C+.
I'm maybe a little bit more positive than you, but I agree it's not a masterpiece. It's not even close. Like, it's when I saw it, I had a very visceral reaction to the action sequences, to the sound and the fury of a war.
Yeah,
of a war that we, the likes of which are basically things like, imagery from Beirut or Afghanistan or places like that, that we're very accustomed to seeing over there, away from us here in the States. I'm not going to go there and say, oh my God, this is what's going to happen if X person gets elected or if Y person doesn't get elected or whatever. I'm not going to go there. I do think there is some kind of message here that obviously, we need to try to be a less polarized nation, but I don't think that's the problem of the film. I think it doesn't want to take a side. And I think it's a bit toothless because it doesn't take a side. I mean, if it really wanted to be an apolitical film that doesn't take a side, I think it would go and show average, everyday, middle-of-the-road Americans in this type of situation, not journalists, who are held up to be the heroes, if they really wanted to just be, what does this look like from the everyday perspective, they would show a family traveling from X place to Y place to try to, to get to, a sick relative and to cross these lines and to make it through these sequences. I mean, you could even keep the same events almost, but just, it would not be journalists. So that's the more I think about it, the less I like the film. I just was so shocked by the power of the action sequences which I think are very well directed, that it kind of colored over any other thing that I had a problem with in the film.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I remember, I'm not comparing this to this, but I do remember like you saying, a war zone in, a different country, not in America. That's a really interesting point, because it's sort of like the same weird way that I thought when January 6th happened and we saw like the coverage of like people in places that people aren't supposed to be. I thought this is weird. I was like, this is weird. This is a really strange feeling to see people doing that. So it's sort of like, those long shots of the, I don't even know what that is. Like a helicopter, it looked like it had like a string of bullets pumping out of it from behind, like around the Washington Monument. That was a very weird thing to see. Now, I will say, I think I got a little desensitized to the final act from everything that was shown in the trailer. I was a little disappointed that there wasn't more. Not that I want to see destruction of the nation's capital, sit here in the nation's capital. But it was sort of like, that really awesome shot of the, there's like an explosion of the Supreme Court and the helicopter over, it goes through the smoke and there's the Washington Monument. You just see the violence everywhere. I was like, I really wish I didn't see that. It would be way more shocking to me if I didn't see that in every single trailer, every single ad for it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I kind of stayed away from the ads and the trailers. Because I didn't think I wanted to see the film until the positive reaction came out from South by Southwest. Which definitely elevated my expectations, perhaps, you know. I think it's a bit unfair to look at this film and to say this is truly an apolitical film, because I know I've seen a lot of people online say that. I don't think it's an apolitical film. I think it's just, it's coded a certain way. And
there's,
I think,
dialogue. Yeah.
Like the very first sequence, and this is not a spoiler, but Nick Offerman plays the president of the United States, who is on his third term, who will not leave office. We are not given any kind of political party, but he is seen rehearsing a speech that he's going to give on national television. And he rehearses the line, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it's something to the effect of, some would say it's the greatest war victory that has ever happened in the history of war. And I mean, no matter what your political persuasion is, you know, there's one person who is very famous for making hyperbolic statements of that nature. And I think that clued in people in the know to say, hey, you're okay here, because this is Trump, basically. I mean, that's what I thought immediately when the film started playing.
Yeah, no, I thought that too. You know, just him trying to figure out how he was going to say stuff. And it was just like, okay, the lines, I can clearly, I understand who you're trying to be. It's not as coded as some, I don't say as some people think it is, but it's sort of just like, okay, I see what you're doing here. Now, I will say something about it. Like, I sort of, when I didn't really know who anybody was, really, like when you see them following people fighting soldiers fighting soldiers, and then later they're with the soldier. I don't know. It was sort of like, I don't know, I quote unquote don't know who people are, but I feel like I got an idea by like 3/4 of the way through. I don't know.
Yeah. And also, there's other things. I don't want to go into it because I don't want to get into a political debate, because we promised a long time ago that we weren't get political on this podcast anymore. It's, you know, I'm a B minus, you're a C plus. I mean, I think we're not far off. I just really respected the action sequences. I just wish it was a little bit more brave, personally, in what it was trying to do.
Action was great. Sure.
Yeah. There we go. All right. So that is Civil War. The next thing up, these are all favorites of yours. I don't want you to describe. I'll describe Ripley. So we'll hop into television on Netflix. We have Ripley, the... Is it 10 episode or 8 episode? Excuse me. I should have brought this. It's 8 episode. The 8 episode limited series based on Patricia Highsmith's book, The Talented Mr. Ripley, which, yes, was indeed adapted into a film back in 1999 called The Talented Mr. Ripley from Anthony Minghella, a very, I think, stellar film from starring Matt Damon, Jude Law, and Gwyneth Paltrow. This is a very, 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 very different film. This is as if I've never read the book, but I can imagine that sort of that neo-noir aspect of that book just sort of leaping onto the screen. And here you go. It's got probably some of the most gorgeous black and white cinematography I've ever seen. Not since like the heyday of black and white cinema in the 40s have I ever seen anything quite so stunning. I mean, I know a lot of people have complained about it, but it's fantastic. So essentially it's the same story stretched out over 8 episodes. It's basically Tom Ripley, played by Andrew Scott, is asked by the parents of Dickie Greenleaf, Johnny Flynn in the limited series, Jude Law in the film, to go to Italy, where Dickie Greenleaf is luxuriously living a sort of aimless existence. They want him to come back. They want him to be a man. They want him to come take over the family business or whatever. And so they ask his quote unquote friend, Tom Ripley, who is a con man, to go to Italy and convince him to come back. But Tom goes to Italy, loves the life of Dickie Greenleaf, loves all of the trappings that come with being a Greenleaf. So spoiler alert, he kills Dickie Greenleaf and essentially dismantles his life and takes it over. And it, the rest of the film is about the chase to see whether or not Tom Ripley can get away with it. My immediate reaction, I know this is something that you really love. My immediate reaction to this was, why is a 2-hour film being spread out over 8 hours? Because I'm not exactly sure I still have a good answer to that question. I do like what I see. It has gotten better as it goes along. First two episodes I thought were kind of dull. I love the cinematography, but after 10 minutes of it, every shot looks amazing. Every shot you want to take a screenshot of and blow it up and put it on your Facebook profile or your Twitter cover photo or whatever. After 10 minutes of that, it does get kind of dull. Episode 3 is brilliant. Episode 3 is when stuff gets kicked into motion. It is really meticulously and brilliantly paced. There's a lot of things that happen. And it's not, it goes back to that old adage. I don't know if you remember this, Joey, or if you've ever heard this before, but like Alfred Hitchcock was often very convinced and very interested in the, not the murder itself, but the artifacts of disposing of the body. It is not easy to dispose of a body. And there are several instances, not just, you know, Anthony Perkins in Psycho trying to figure out what to do with all the stuff that Marion Crane or Janet Leigh leaves behind in Psycho, but there are other films of his that have that same plot. And that episode, number 3, deals with a lot of it. I'm very anxious. I'm halfway through the series. I'm very anxious to finish it. It is definitely getting better as it goes along. So, Joey, what did you think of it?
I'm actually a pretty huge fan of it. I will admit it took me a minute to get into this because I love the 1999 version so much. I love that movie. I do remember as I was watching the Netflix series that I read the book after I, you know, fell in love with the movie. And I remember the book being very different. And I don't remember being disappointed by that, but I was like, oh, well, so the Minghella version is very much an adaptation of the book. And I love it just because like the color, and it just feels like you feel sort of like you're getting tan watching it because everything is so pretty, and you can like, you know, smell the sea or the wine and everything. It just, you know, it is really great. I want to revisit the movie again, especially after watching this. I think the series really is an exercise in, I don't say restraint, but I think the filmmaking is very patient with it. Steven Zaillian directed and wrote all of it. And I think that it sort of rests on these like old laurels of character and writing and scheming that we probably haven't seen or we're not accustomed to. Like there's an episode later, this isn't a spoiler for you, but basically Tom Ripley is being investigated by a very Italian inspector who thinks that he is Dickie Greenleaf. And the way, the precision in which he goes back and forth and just makes stuff up or like weasels around, it's sort of like, I think it sort of makes you wonder like how far you think you could go with lying this much. And you sort of never see Andrew Scott sweat, really. There's only a couple of moments. It's only really when he's by himself that you don't see panic, but you see sort of like some uncertainty. But like when he is in front of people like the inspector or Dakota Fanning, who plays Marge in the series, feels like he's very much in control. Even when he's not in control, it feels like he's in control. And I think that was very interesting. Now, I will say something that I loved. I mean, I think it is fucking gorgeous, but I think there's like a real paranoia to some of the shots. Like, you know, there are a couple of shots where like he's discarding of a boat and like there's somebody in the background. and you don't know who it is. You can't even see the person well enough to know, are they even facing this direction? Are they looking at me? Are they staring at me? What are they doing? I thought the show really lets a sense of paranoia sink in a lot. And then there's something else I was going to say, but I can't remember. I like the way they pronounce Freddie Miles. Freddie Miles. Mr. Miles. I don't know. I loved it. I don't know. I was really sort of hypnotized by it. Once I got really into it, I fell really, really hard for it.
Yes. I think Andrew Scott is brilliant in this. At first I thought he was kind of flat, but I think that's kind of the point. I love his performance, and I think he's probably a front runner to win an Emmy for this. One of three that I think are in very serious contention. The other two being John Hamm for Fargo and Tom Hollander for Feud, Capote versus the Swans. I think Tom Hollander will get nominated. I just don't know how much people love or have, you know, the reactions to that are very,
very mixed. at best.
So yeah, anyway,
do I know anybody that actually finished that show?
I did.
I know I have to.
Where I kind of go a little bit wrong with Ripley is I think Andrew Scott in his own way is a good interpretation of it stands on the same in a different way stands on the same playing field as Matt Damon. I think where it goes a little bit wrong is the performances of Dakota Fanning and Johnny Flynn, who play the Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow roles. I think Dakota Fanning is fine. I think Johnny, she's not Gwyneth Paltrow, right? It's a different performance for a different take on the material. Johnny Flynn just doesn't, to me, he doesn't give off that same level of God, my life is good. Don't you envy me that Jude Law did in Talented Mr. Ripley, the film. And I think that's kind of a problem.
Yeah. I sort of didn't really, I will admit, I didn't really enjoy him at first, but then I sort of wondered if he played it more. He doesn't play it as a playboy. He sort of plays it with, because one of my favorite things is something to, actually, I won't say it because I'm not sure if you got to that part yet, but there's something with his painting that they make a joke later. And I think they play him more completely naive. There's a scene, I think it's an episode like 3 or 4, it has to be 3, I think, whenever he gives money to a woman and Tom is like, looks like the woman is stranded or something. And Tom, Dickie gives the money. And then Tom is just like, she like lied to you. Like she didn't need money. She doesn't have a problem. Like she played you essentially. He's like, what? Really? I thought when I realized that that's what they were kind of doing, I thought that was more interesting. I think I prefer the sort of playboyish dickhead. Yeah, and I will say Dakota Fanning she comes back a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, I have to assume that that's the case from the inevitable role that that character has to take in exploring what happens to Dickie Greenleaf.
Right.
But you know, I have a lot to catch up on all of a sudden.
Yeah. Like, don't you remember? Just circling back on my email now that it's mid-April. What do you think of these 27 things?
So you know, I think cinematography's in the bag. But for I don't know where. I don't know where this goes with limited series itself. I still think it's Shogun because it does, the ratings are there. It's incredibly popular. It's it's, you know, it in itself is a remake, but it's a inclusive and authentic take on the material. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I don't know. We'll see. The reactions to Ripley have been good, but, you know, not uniformly positive. I know some people are kind of put off by the combination of the black and white and the leisurely pacing of the first two episodes.
It's going to be interesting to see what Netflix does, because they have so they have Ripley, which could get in for a ton of stuff, like crafts-wise, cinematography, production design, all that jazz. And then I think their other big player would be All the Light They Cannot See, but I don't think that will get anywhere near the acting. And then I don't know what they want to do with Griselda outside of actress, and I don't know what they want to do with that Benedict Cumberbatch limited series, Eric, that's coming out. So yeah. those are the four that are on the top of they launched their FYC site, and those four that are at the top of their pile. But I feel like,
That's coming too late.
They should hold that.
Yeah. It feels like they're just dumping it, honestly, but I may be wrong. We do have screeners for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is Ripley. Why don't you take us into the world of Mary and George and keep it clean?
Make no promises. So Mary and George is a new limited series on Stars. It's 7 episodes. It's airing now. I don't think it's finished. This log line, if you had to pitch it in an elevator, be like, what if the Countess of Buckingham really just wanted to whore out her son to get closer to power and acceptance? So this show stars Julianne Moore as Mary, I think it's Villiers, and Nicholas Galitzine, who's not gay, is playing another gay royal as her son, George, her second son, her first son. There seems to be like a mental issue there. So she's always like, well, who's going to marry my first son? So the person who has to sort of lead the family is George. And George is in love with a servant or stable girl. And she's like, no, you're going to fuck the king. So this is basically the story about how Mary's scheming with the help of her son's loins brings her closer to power, and sort of how he gets close with the king, who's played by Tony Curran, who plays King James IV. And I don't know. I just think it's really fun. I feel like it's just, I don't know. I'm not saying you need to teach everyone history this way, because like, just think of like, remember the guy from that Amazon movie? Let's just get him naked and he'll just fuck everyone. And then Julianne Moore will wear high collars and call everyone a cunt, and she'll spit on things. But guess what? She's also kind of a lesbian too. And all this other stuff. It's just sort of like the most salacious history lesson that I've had in a while, and I think I'm just having a really fun time with it. I don't know.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I think I'm enjoying it a little bit less than you, but it's
well, you know, all the gay butt sex is more on shocking is more on my level of interest than a straight dude in Clarence. So this episode is earning its explicit rating. Yes,
it is definitely doing that. In fact, to the point where I'm like, is that a prosthetic, or is that like the most lucky person to ever walk on the earth?
I was like, oh wow, oh
it's there's some funny stuff. There's some the production design, the costumes are fantastic, or, you know, kind of ridiculous. There are some really witty and funny things that are said here. The script, let's see who wrote this. The script is written by DC Moore, who looks like is the predominant screenwriter of all of it, and one of the producers, the creator. What did DC Moore do? Let me just look at his Wikipedia page. Don't know too much of it. Okay, great. Sometimes I'm like, is this really a 7-hour thing? Like, I feel like it's the first two episodes have been a little bit, not redundant, but just, this could be a 2-hour movie and it would be a great 2-hour movie. And Julianne Moore would win another Oscar for it. But, no, we're going to do this. You know, I don't know who this is for. That's the problem. Like, I watch this and I think the Masterpiece Theater crowd is going to pass out when they see half of this stuff. And, you know, the younger crowd probably, you know, I don't know. There's just too much power, too much the tale of the riches that they don't really care about now. And they don't like sex anymore. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know who this is for. Julianne Moore's fantastic. I think Nicholas is a very good actor who I think, you know, proves that he's not just a flash in the pan with Red, White, and Royal Blue. I think he's very good in this. I laughed out loud a lot of times. I'm like, oh, I'm going to fast forward through this scene because I don't want to be caught watching something that I probably,
yeah. Yeah, your wife is like, so, Clarence.
I just feel so dirty. but it's fun, I guess. I'm very mixed on it, but I guess I'll continue to watch it. I don't think this is going to do anything at the Emmys beyond like production, you know, like below the line. I don't think this is going to get in for limited series. First of all, I mean, it's as much as we love them, the Television Academy, for whatever reason, is not kind to stars, in stars products.
I think the when you say who is this for, Stars has a lot of shows that are like, this is, I don't know how, you know, quote unquote sexy they are, because I don't watch a lot of Stars programming, like the historical stuff. Like, they have stuff like, you know, like The White Princess or The Spanish Princess or the something queen and this, that, and the other. I think it's for that crowd. I think the greatest thing that this could possibly get is, I don't know, complete long shot for Julianne Moore. I don't think anybody else could come close, but I mean, that category is traditionally only 5 slots, and you have Shogun, Lessons in Chemistry, the women from True Detective,
right?
Kate Winslet, as much as everybody does not like the show, she could still pop in there. Griselda, Juno Temple, I don't know, but I don't think she's probably in the top 10, but probably not anywhere near the top 5. But I think that's the greatest thing that the show could hope for.
Yeah. But she is awfully good, and I will say she is better in this than Kate Winslet in The Regime. As much as I love Kate, Julianne Moore is better in this. She's better. No, she's better than Naomi Watts in Feud. She's better. You know, I think she should be nominated, but I just don't know that she will be. That's kind of where I am with it.
I think I am.
But if you're looking for a randy costume drama, this is, look no further than this.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, wow. I guess when there's nothing to do, I guess you just bang everyone. Everyone. Everyone.
Everyone. What I love is in the first episode, it's basically the plot of the first episode is, so you send your son to France to become gay. And that's essentially the plot of the first episode. Am I wrong?
No, that's right. Like, she says, what does she say? Yeah, that's completely right. Like, oh, I don't want to go to France. And it was like, well, you're going to go to France and you're going to get Eiffel Towered. There you go.
That's fine. Yep. Anything else on either of those?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating the upcoming week. I'll let you go first because Megan's not here and we do deeply miss Megan. I guess we should say that Megan, Megan is extraordinarily busy conducting interviews, which you will find later on this Emmy season on awardsdaily.com/ADTV. So, go ahead.
So I have seen most of this. My review is a little late, but I'm excited for it to come out. This isn't really something I'm excited to see. Is tomorrow, Tuesday or Wednesday, the 17th, Hulu is dropping the first two episodes of Under the Bridge, which I have seen. And it is, I personally think it's so, so good. And I wonder if it's a stealth contender somewhere in the limited series race, just because it's a really compelling story. That's a true story. I didn't know it was a true story until I got to like episode two, about this really heinous murder of a young girl. She's of Indian descent. And she was 14, and she is
a girl. Like Indian or indigenous American?
Her family is from India.
Okay.
Like, yeah, her father. Yeah. It's this really sort of, this happened in Canada, and I think in like, I can't remember when it happened. It was 1997. And, so it follows the girl. She's like this, she's desperate for these girls that are in a group home to like her. She doesn't have any friends. She feels really ostracized in school and within the community because no one else looks like her. So the show really focuses on that struggle, but then it's also the story of Riley Keough plays the real life writer, Rebecca Godfrey. Rebecca Godfrey wrote the book Under the Bridge, and she's also a character in the story. Riley Keough plays her. She's going to write a book about her hometown when the murder happens. And then she has a friendship with Lily Gladstone, who is a cop, who feels she was adopted when she was younger to a family who did not look like her. And so she has sort of this pull to help really, make a name for herself, but also do right by the young girl who dies. Sorry, that was a long tangent that no one asked for. So I'm looking forward to that. It's really good. And then I'm super excited to see this experimental film that I've heard nothing but really fun things about, The People's Joker. That is expanding to my area. I think it originally was supposed to debut at TIFF in 2022, but they pulled it for like copyright concerns. It's sort of like, right, the log line is, a law-breaking comedian who is grappling with her gender identity forms a new anti-comedy troupe with a friend and finds herself battling a fascistic caped crusader. So I watched the trailer and I was like, what is this movie? And I want to see it.
So. Is that it?
Yeah.
I'm very interested in Under the Bridge as well. You've seen it. So what do you think about the placement of Lily Gladstone and Riley Keough in supporting?
So I thought originally that was strange because I was like halfway through it when I read that news, and I thought, okay, that's really interesting. But I think they did that. I really think the leads are the younger people. So I think it kind of makes sense. I could see you making an argument that, they are the two adult women are the leads. I don't know, because they're more the face of the show, but really it centers on the younger girls and the writer and the police officer are sort of like circling them. So I think that's, in terms of placement, it makes sense. I don't know what that'll do awards wise though. Cause sometimes there are shows that have, you know, a face of a show that is run in lead, that, you know, helps bring up a, you know, bigger face to the show, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, with those two people, Lily Gladstone and Riley Keough, I mean, in the last 2 years, they were both nominated for a ton of awards. So maybe them both being in supporting in a category that typically has 7 or 8 people, maybe they'll just both get in.
I mean, I think it makes it easier for them to get nominated in this category.
Yeah. I mean, I can see them both getting in because Riley and Lily have really great chemistry. But the young girls are so good. So, so good. There's one girl that I'm just like, that girl's a psycho.
The commercial that I've seen, looked amazing. So I'm very excited to see it.
It's just sort of like this gritty, incredibly like, well, I think respectful. I think it's, I don't know the story. I actually ordered the book. Like I was so invested in the story that it made me want to read the book. So, I think it's really well done. I think audiences will have, there's a potential for the audiences to really latch onto it.
Excellent. All right. In my world, no movies I'm looking forward to. Just, you know, probably not looking forward to anything until the Fall Guy.
Are over.
Well, that's not entirely true. I kind of wanted to see, there was a part of me that did want to see, what's the vampire girl movie? Abigail. Is it Abigail?
Yeah. I wish they didn't show so much in that trailer.
Yeah, they showed a lot in the trailer, and then it became very apparent what the whole setup was. So I was just like, you know, I don't see that. I'm good. TV, I need to finish Ripley, obviously, as well as Mary and George. I have been, because of Emmy interview time, I have been revisiting something that I did not watch in the fall of 2023, and that is the Monarch limited series or series, dramatic series from Apple, which I did not realize was a Godzilla thing, just so she goes to show you how little I paid attention to it. But it's part of the whole Godzilla and Kong monsterverse that is currently at the box office with, what is the name of that movie? Godzilla versus Kong, Kong versus Godzilla, Son of Kong.
The New Empire.
Yeah, whatever. Monarch is obviously, it has, it's called Monarch Legacy of Monsters, and it's got Anna Sawai, who is also in Shogun, and has Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell playing the same character at different eras. It's interesting. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. It's very entertaining. It's very human-driven, much more so than the big budget monster smash things films. I'm really liking it so far. So I want to finish that. And I have screeners to season 3 of HBO's Hacks. I had the first 2 episodes, and my prediction is that yes, we all love the bear, and yes, we all love Io Itabiri. Am I saying it right? I need to get used to it again.
Well, hold on.
Idebiri.
Idebiri. We've been saying it wrong for 2 years. Idebiri. And no one corrected us.
No, I think it's Idebiri, right? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Io Idebiri. I think Jean Smart might win for episode 2 of season 3. I think she's fan fucking tastic in this. And
from someone at HBO.
Well, I had they. So here's a story. HBO knows that I love this show. They gave me early screeners years ago, and then I was on the press junket, and I got to talk to Jean Smart, and I got to talk to Hannah Einbinder, and the writers and the directors, and then they gave me season 2, and then for whatever reason, they completely forgot that I existed, and then they sent me an email randomly out of thin air, hey, we know you love this show, we'd like to give you these first 2 episodes, this was about a month ago, but you can't talk about them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, great, that's fine, I'd love to see it. And then they gave every single other person on the face of the earth the rest of season three but me. I'm like, because I saw a mutual of ours brag, a humble brag tweet about the fact that they'd seen the entire show. And I immediately got on my email, which I don't often do this, but I immediately got on my email and I said, "Dear HBO, remember when you gave me those first two episodes and I told you I loved them and I couldn't wait to see the rest of the show? Well, I'm seeing on social that the rest of the show is now available. Could I please have it?" And then they said, "Yes, you can." So they have sent them to me.
Like, give it.
So
give it to me.
Yeah. Book-wise, I am reading the next Nicole Kidman limited series, The Perfect Couple, by Ellen Hildebrand. And that is not a joke. That is the reason this book popped up on my list, is because Nicole Kidman is going to be in it.
Oh my God, I thought you were kidding.
No, it's not a joke.
Don't look that up.
It's about a British writer whose son is getting married in the Hamptons, or excuse me, Nantucket, until there's a murder. So.
There was I think I saw someone was just like, "Hey, I love her, but can Nicole Kidman stop playing rich white ladies in peril?" Like, shut up. That's fine. Like, okay, Megan Fahey, Dakota Johnson.
Yep.
Billy
yep.
Howell, Liev Schreiber, Donalyn Champlin.
Oh, who is that character?
She plays Nikki Henry.
I don't know who that character is.
Oh, maybe it's directed by Susanna Bia.
Oh, who also directed The Undoing?
Yeah.
And The First Lady. Bia.
I'm sorry. Whoa. Isabella Adjani is in this show?
Yes, apparently so.
Oh my God. Fucking love her.
What's funny is that, let me see. Yeah, they changed up stuff here. Oh, yeah. Some would say they have wokeified this cast.
Some people? You're saying
some people.
Some people.
Not this person. Some people would.
Not this person, not you person, some people.
Yeah. It looks like it's going to come out. Let's see. They filmed in Nantucket in September during the strike. I wonder how they did that.
Scab!
Yeah, this is going to come out on Netflix. And it's a drama series. Oh, good Lord. They're going to do multiple seasons of this. It's a fun summer read. You know those things that we can still have fun, right? No?
Yeah, they have a whole section of those books in Target. What are you talking about?
That's all that Target sells. Which, by the way...
It's like, you want to have fun with murder?
Which, by the way, I do have to say, bravo to the world, to Target, for bringing back or for hiring Kristen Wiig to do their campaign for Target.
Oh my God.
I love Target lady.
Target.
Target. So I'm on the clock and ready to rock.
the video of her like sliding something open in her apartment and she just like crawls through a hole and is in Target. That made me laugh.
That is
so
amazing.
So hard.
It is amazing.
It's so stupid.
I also have to, we often talk about how horrible Saturday Night Live has been. And I have gotten to the point where I, you know, as we've talked about many times, it used to be appointment television. Sometimes I don't even watch the YouTube clips. Kudos to Saturday Night Live for putting out their best episode in 10 years with Ryan Gosling. Absolutely amazing. Oh. I hope he wins an Emmy.
I heard that was a really good episode. And I watched some of the sketches and I was like, if the rest of the sketches are as fun as this, then yes.
I think I saw all of the sketches. I may have fallen asleep at like 12:45, which I'm old, forgive me. Mm-hmm. But from what I saw, yes, everything was top notch. Very impressed. Yeah. Great job, guys. Great job. I hope Ryan Gosling wins an Emmy. Although he'll probably be up against somebody from The Bear. So. From that Fishes episode.
Six people from The Bear and Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. Well, then obviously Ryan Gosling wins. All right. Does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the hell out of here. So we are the two M's contributors, Joey Moser and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us. And please remember to light a candle for Joey as he flies back home from Washington, D.C. And wish you a very pleasant day.